An hour or so later, and feeling almost sinfully warmed and comfortable, Stormkeep found himself seated in a richly upholstered chair in the chamber Lartros used as an office. The Baron's clerk was nowhere in sight, but Father Erwin Yeer, Lartros's chaplain and confessor, sat in a marginally plainer chair on the far side of the fireplace. Rain pattered against the windows and gurgled musically through gutters and downspouts. A coal fire seethed quietly in a shallow grate. Decorative cut crystal glittered on the marble mantel above the fire, and all three of them had snifters of brandy at their elbows. It was as peaceful and welcoming a scene as Stormkeep could have imagined, yet Yer's expression was anxious as he looked at Lartros.
"So the traitors have truly decided to capitulate to Caleb, my lord?"
The priest sounded as if even now he found it difficult to believe.
"In fairness, father," Stormkeep said before the Baron could speak, "it's not as if the Regency Council had a great deal of choice. With Prince Hector and his son both dead, Divan out of the princedom, and Caleb besieging the capital, their only real options were surrender or standing a siege which could end only one way."
"True enough, Solomon." Lartros's voice was considerably harsher than the Earl's had been.
"But there's a difference between a tactical decision to surrender a city and what Father Erwin has so aptly called capitulating."
"There I can't argue with you," Stormkeep conceded, his own voice bleaker. "Mind you, I do think there's some point to Anvil Rock's argument. With no army left in the field, with our navy sealed up in port, and with Caleb in position to bring in still more troops whenever the urge struck him, what were we supposed to use to stop him from doing whatever he wanted? He already had thousands of men in the princedom, and he hadn't even begun deploying any Chisomian troops here, so he still had every single soldier in Charlian's army, a considerably larger and even more professional army than the one he'd already brought with him, I might add, in reserve. I, on the other hand, have less than 80 armsmen in my entire guard. How many do you have?"
Lartros growled, but he couldn't dispute the Earl's point. It had taken Prince Franz, Prince Hector's father, the better part of 20 years to complete the process of stripping his nobles of their feudal levies, but he'd managed it in the end. And, truth to tell, Stormkeep and most of his fellow aristocrats had seen the wisdom of his policy, after the fact at least. After all, the Royal Army, with its corps of professional long-term troops, would have made mincemeat out of any levies one of them, or even an alliance of several of them, could have put into the field against it anyway. None of them could afford to maintain a force which could have changed that, even assuming Franz had been willing to let them try, which he hadn't been. He'd made that point rather firmly, and the plain truth was that most of his magnates had been just as happy to avoid the sort of occasional fratricide which had racked parts of Coruscant with dreary predictability under Franz's father and grandfather. At least this way, each of them was spared the expense of maintaining his own private troops, while the army saw to it that none of his fellows were in a position to threaten him. Unfortunately, that policy of Prince Franz's had just come home to roost with a vengeance.
"The largest force any of us, even someone like one of the dukes, can command, is barely enough to keep the peace in his own lands, and not one of us has any of the new weapons," the Earl pointed out remorselessly. "Would you like to try to stand up to a battalion or two of Carisian marines with their damned rifles and artillery with that?"
There was silence for a moment, profound enough for all of them to hear the patter of the persistent rain against the chamber's windows. Then Lartros shook his head.
"No," he said, "or not yet, at least."
"Exactly," Stormkeep said very, very quietly, and he and the Baron looked at one another.
It wasn't as if they hadn't discussed the situation at length during the endless ride from Chiraeth to Cerebor. They'd had to be at least a little circumspect, since there was no telling which set of ears, even among their own retainers, might be eager to curry favor with the Carizian occupiers by carrying tales. But they'd known one another for a long time. Neither of them had been left in any doubt about where the other stood. On the other hand,
"It's going to have to be handled carefully," Stormkeep pointed out softly.
"Oh, I agree entirely," Lartros grimaced. "Unless I'm mistaken, at least some of those southerners are actually willing to stand in line to lick Caleb's hand, or his arse, for that matter."
He shook his head in disgust.
"And I never thought I'd say this, but I'm pretty sure Anvil Rock is too."
"Truly, my lord,"
Yair shook his head. "I confess I always thought the Earl was completely loyal to Prince Hector. Not to mention Mother Church."
"So did I, Erwin," Lartros shrugged. "From the way he reacted to any suggestion we play for time, though, I'm beginning to think we were both wrong about that. Either that or the guts have gone out of him. Not to mention his damned son."
Stormkeep considered pointing out that Sir Corin Garvai, the Earl of Anvil Rock's son, had probably done as well as anyone could have in the face of the Carizian's crushing tactical superiority. Blaming Garvai for his army's defeat, however satisfying it might be, was scarcely an exercise in fair-mindedness.
"On the other hand, fair-mindedness isn't exactly what we need just now, either," the Earl reminded himself. "And if being pissed at Anvil Rock and Garvai helps motivate Rajir or some of the others, then so be it.